We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, before we get into the podcast today and listen to Drew being a lunatic, I got to tell you guys about Blue Wire Hustle. A brand new program where you can host your very own podcast right here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box to find out more. That's bwhustle.com/join.
Hello?
We're on to Cincinnati.
You play to win the game.
It was all that Dan Marino's fault. Everyone knows that.
When it's too tough for them, it's just right for us.
Rockpile Report, AFC East Roundup, hosted by Bills season ticket holder Drew Gear, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network.
Well, it's always good to win. It always feels good to win, first off. You know, I know outsiders are probably going to say, well, it wasn't you in there that brought the win. Of course, it was Fitz, and I think it was a great effort by not just him, but the entire offense. You know, just him understanding, you know, how to get in the groove and, you know, where to go quickly with the ball and whatnot. I think that's what makes Fitz who he is. And in a way, it really wasn't as shocking tonight, you know, to see what had happened. You know, they call him Fitz Magic for a reason.
Welcome, everybody, to the Week 16 edition of your AFC East Roundup podcast. I'm your host, Drew Gear, and that's Chris Krueger from the Rock Pal Report. And that was Tua Tagovailoa from his post-game presser in the aftermath of their season-salvaging win in Vegas from MiamiDolphins.com. Week 16 in the books. Wow.
It's
a week for the division.
It's insane because we don't, like, last night we don't have anything to play for. Like, I mean, there was keeping the number two seed playing last night, but, like, it was relaxing.
It was weird. It was a weird watch.
We had 4 days in a row of football with Christmas Day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We didn't play till Monday. And just a whole, at least for me, outside of fantasy reasons, everything was just flat out relaxing.
I know. It was a weird thing. And when you look back at the way it all played out, I mean, from the top, your Buffalo, as we stand today, the Buffalo Bills are 12-3 and sitting in first place. The Bills, much like Negan in the opening of The Walking Dead Season 7, just served notice that there's somebody new running the show in the AFC East, and then it's no longer up for debate by battering the New England Patriots to pieces in front of the entire country. The Miami Dolphins are 10-4, sitting in second place. I think in one of the more improbable, wild finishes to a game I've ever seen, the Dolphins go on to beat the Raiders to land their first 10-win season since the early 2000s. The Patriots, at 6-9, are sitting in third place. In losing to Buffalo, they cemented their first losing season since the early 2000s. What did you say?
2000, to be exact.
2000.
Patriots went 5-11.
Wow. I mean, I have for you here, in my hand, the world's smallest violin, playing the saddest song ever written. If you listen really hard, you might just be able to hear it. And then you get the Jets. The two-win New York Jets. Where has this team been all year? The fan base continues to live in free fall as they watch their season-long draft plans just evaporate into dust in front of their very eyes. But maybe that means there's some bright spots on the roster. Maybe it means that there's something positive here that they can at least hang their head on, a silver lining for them. And so without further ado, I think the biggest storyline right now in the division, it's the thing that people are talking about, thing that people are emailing and filling up my DMs about, and it's all this guy's fault. We got to talk about the Miami Dolphins winning 26-25 over the Raiders, and Mr. Elfar Tiaga is here to not only talk about the quarterback controversy that probably isn't or shouldn't be, and the fact that now I'm getting DMs and tweets from people about it because of his last appearance. Elf, how are you doing down there?
I'm doing just fine. 10-5 and needing one more.
I don't even know what to say about the outcome of that Raiders game. I mean, it was one of... My wife woke up as I'm laying on the couch watching that game unfold. And she goes, "What's your problem? Why?" She's like, she could tell I was irritated. She's like, "Why are you mad? This isn't even, like, you have no skin in the game in this football game. Why are you angry about this?" And I was like, I don't understand. I just hate bad football. And what I saw was some shenanigans. First of all, Fitzpatrick is a madman. Second of all, Gruden might be one of the worst coaches in the NFL in terms of his players understanding execution and just being assignment sound, playing assignment sound football. He might be Rex Ryan 2.0, and it blows my mind that he's just given carte blanche by this franchise to continue ruining their their fans deserve better. And now what we have coming out of this game, the Dolphins are still alive in the thick of the playoff hunt, and you have a quarterback controversy that won't go away despite whatever your coach says. I think it's fan-base driven. And I got to ask the question. Now, the benching of Tua, once is a fluke, twice is somewhat concerning. Can a team really bench its starter three times in a single season?
I think they can do it, I think, 16 times because he played 16 games.
Okay, so you're of the mindset that this, if this were to continue happening, it still wouldn't rock your faith in the direction of the team as a whole.
If it happens next year, after they give him all his weapons and he has a full offseason, and he doesn't have to rehab a shattered hip, then yeah, then there will be some problems. But, you know, nobody wants to look at any context with this kid. You know, he had no off season. He was actually cleared for contact like 3 weeks into the regular season. 3 weeks. Okay? So he wasn't even ready for if they had a preseason this year. He probably wasn't going to play. So what do we have? We have this terrible quarterback play, which has led us to 13 touchdowns and 3 turnovers. I don't know when that became bad, but evidently it's bad. His 6-2 record, 2 comeback wins inside of those 6 wins, a great performance against the Chiefs, one that could have been an epic performance against the Bengals if it weren't for a bunch of drop passes. And then, yeah, he was horrific against Denver. I thought he played a terrible game against the Broncos. In this game, what we're calling terrible is 17 for 22 and very few yards, 94, I believe, or 96, and a touchdown pass. That's what we're calling terrible. He wasn't pushing the ball downfield, and he actually looked confused to me on a certain on a few plays.
Now, this is one thing I'll say, because I watched this whole game and it made me want to stick my thumbs directly into my eye sockets at some points, because both of your teams just frustrated the hell out of me as I'm trying to watch and enjoy this football game. The Miami game plan early on, for everybody talking about, oh, well, he didn't throw for that many yards. I'm not trying to be a Tua apologist here or a defender, but the game plan almost seemed like the Chan Gailey game plan they came into that game with almost seemed to be, let's throw short stuff and just hope that they suck at tackling the way they usually suck at tackling.
Yep.
And instead, they actually connected on a lot. Early on in the game, you saw them just, everything that moved got brought down with almost no yards after the catch.
Yeah, somebody asked me, you know, it's really hard to have 17 completions and only 94 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, it's really hard to have 17 receptions and only 94 yards. Like, break a tackle.
That's it.
You know?
But then
interesting enough, at the end of the game, you know, when Gaskins gives the Dolphins the lead, he caught a 7-yard pass and then had 52 yards and run after the catch.
Exactly.
For a touchdown.
And when you go back, and if anybody out there who's been watching or paying attention to the Raiders, that's how you beat them. They're not assignment sound because they're coached by a bum. Their coach is a bum with a terrible haircut who needs him and the GM. Chris, mark my words on this. In 3 years, both of them will be back on TV.
All right.
There's no way either one of them, Mayock or Gruden, has a job in football in 3 years. But so that's the recipe for beating this team, because they're just poor at executing plays. They don't do well on defense. They're not organized. And so with that, you saw over time that Chan Gailey, hey, dink and dunk, as soon as you scared them with a couple shots across the bow from Ryan Fitzpatrick, which was the change. When you saw Fitzpatrick get inserted into the lineup, the first thing he did was he takes a shot downfield to Gesicki. And even though it didn't connect, you saw the safeties from that point on, the safeties were backed out of the box. They backed way off because they were just like, oh, shit, he's actually going to throw it. We got to get out of here. And the rest of the game, your offense kind of had them on their heels in that regard. When you look at it in terms of being a quarterback controversy, I know long-term, Tua obviously has more upside long-term than Ryan Fitzpatrick, and that the Dolphins fans who are currently calling for you guys to draft another quarterback this year are lunatics. You're dumb. You're like radio callers over at WGR 550 talking about cutting players without understanding how a salary cap works. I mean, these people shouldn't be paid any attention to. But you personally, looking at what's at stake, which quarterback out of the two right now, with the collection of talent you currently have healthy on hand, gives Miami the best chance to win?
Tua Tagovailoa, because he will not turn it over. And it's as simple as that.
Okay.
We now have equal sample sizes, okay, of actual playing time. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, in his playing time, has 10, let me see. It's more than that, actually. You got to add the other two. So we're talking about 11 turnovers. Tua has 3. And this is the equal amount of quarters, equal amount of snaps as starting quarterbacks.
Okay.
So, you know, 11 against 3. And then when you're talking touchdowns, Fitzpatrick has 1 more. So for all the stuff about, okay, he opens up the offense. That's all ridiculous stuff. It just is.
They're buzzwords. It's stuff people throw.
It's just buzzwords.
Yeah.
And, you know, I gave you the stat last week. And, you know, I guess this week it's a little bit skewed because Fitzpatrick put up a couple of points in this game. He put up 10 points in relief. But you gotta understand, before this week, Tua's offense was outscoring Fitzpatrick's offense. Those are just facts. There's nothing else to talk about. And I said it also on the 3 yards per carry account. You cannot go on TV and say Brian Flores deserves Coach of the Year and then say that he's blowing the biggest decision a coach makes every week in and week out. It's just not possible. You can't do that. Then you got to say, okay, he's not Coach of the Year because he's blowing the quarterback decision. So you either agree with him or you don't. But don't call him Coach of the Year and then say, okay, he's terrible at managing these quarterbacks. He's playing the wrong one.
playing the wrong one is such a hard thing to nail down because I'm looking at my notes here that I have for this conversation.
Well, we're pretty good at that historically, Doug Flutie and Rob Johnson.
Well, that's it. Because here's what this is. You've got two quarterbacks with two different skill sets, just like we did in the example Chris just gave you. Fitz clearly has more downfield throwing ability just in terms of his willingness to just chuck it. Mm-hmm. He gives no F's. He doesn't care. He'll throw it into double coverage, even if it's an ill-advised pass. I mean, the pass that he made that ultimately went on to win you guys the game on Saturday is one of those balls that 9 times out of 10, something bad happens when you huck a ball up like that. If there's not that pass made in conjunction with a busted coverage, that's probably either an interception or at least a batted pass. And when you look at that miss to Gesicki in the end zone, where he's down there and he rushed the play. If he had waited one more second, just stood in the pocket, let the play develop just a hair longer, and then delivered a catchable ball, you're talking about 6 points. And instead, he rushes a throw to Gesicki, which Gesicki has a monster catch radius, and he somehow overthrows him in the back of the end zone.
Mm-hmm. Sells it right over his head.
He's going to rush things in pressure situations because that's who Fitzpatrick is. It's just encoded into his DNA. Tua's a little more, he's not going to give you that downfield dynamic passing, but what he's going to do is he's going to make fewer mistakes like that. And so you got to take the good with the bad. And when I look at that, I think of Lossman and Holcomb. You remember that, Chris? The constant back and forth in hard moments where they'd pull Lossman after he had a bad game and they'd put in Holcomb. And then Holcomb would get a few starts and Holcomb wouldn't, I mean, he was a backup quarterback for a reason. So then they'd put Lossman back in eventually. And it's like, listen, you're actually derailing his development when it comes to playing through tough moments and tough learning from tragedy playing out on the football field. Is there any, I mean, it doesn't sound like it. Is there any fear in your mind that this could affect his development if he keeps getting yo-yoed in and out of the starting lineup?
No. And one thing that can affect his development, in my opinion, is the two different playbooks. And make no mistake, you know, at times, they were playing basically on the same playbook, and it was just when Fitzpatrick actually got in, which was against Denver and against the Raiders, they just got more desperate, and they started throwing it all over the lot, and they started spreading out the field. But in this last game, a lot of the things that Gesicki, that they ran with Gesicki, especially that seam pass, and then that arrow route that they ran with him, where he ran away from that linebacker for that 20-yard gain early on, when Fitzpatrick came in, those are things that they just didn't give Tua to run.
Mm.
Tua, they were running a lot of two and even three tight ends at times. And they even brought in a fullback with Tua. They were running the ball a lot more. They were doing more play action. It was a much more conservative game plan. And it seems like that was their game plan and that's what they were going to run. Now, with Fitzpatrick, all of a sudden, they just opened it all up. And it was... it's that YOLO offense that they run with him. That, you know, it's just Yahoo, just throw it all the way downfield and hopefully good things happen. And you know, and who knows? This time it worked. It didn't work against Denver. You got to understand, against Denver, Tua was down a touchdown. In my opinion, they should have kept him in because the result of that was that Ryan Fitzpatrick almost threw three interceptions and then did throw the losing interception in the end zone as he was trying to tie it.
Yeah, Bills fans know that feeling. Trust me, we feel your pain. So, obviously Tua's the starter, but to your point, the coaching staff seems to have a hard time, or at least the offensive coordinator, in giving Tua full rein to run this offense. And if that's the case, and if they're not going to give him those types of plays, but you know that they know that they've got a Fitzpatrick waiting in the wings who they can turn to, and they're not gun-shy about doing it. How short is Tua's leash in must-win games? You guys are now at the point of the season where every game from here on out that you get to play is a must-win. How short is Tua's leash, do you think, given how the coaches have treated him?
Well, if he looked like he did against the Raiders, where he wasn't pushing the ball down the field, and then he had the three consecutive three and outs, and that's what did it, then, yeah, you could see, you know, the hook coming out for him again. But then you have also other examples like the Chiefs game where they were down big and they stuck with it. And he brought them back in the second half, throwing the ball all over the lot and running essentially Ryan Fitzpatrick's playbook. And Tua, make no mistake, is best in empty and best in that no huddle. He's best throwing to a lot of targets, not in two and three tight end sets with a fullback and running it out of the I formation and then play action. It's not his game. It's just not his game. There's just way too much of the same stuff and not enough of the things that he is best at. He's best at RPO. He's best at empty. He's best at five wide.
So with all of that in mind, you guys have this gigantic matchup with Buffalo coming this week. And I love it. I love the fact that there's meaningful football to be played between our teams for the first time in what feels like 20 years. I mean, I can't tell you the last... Chris, do you remember a game in the last 10 that actually meant anything? Like, really felt like it was going to be a game?
No.
Not like, hey, we're like in 2017 when we rolled in there and said, okay, they're not very good. We're just going to kind of mop up. Hopefully we don't screw this up. We get the win and we keep our fingers crossed. Somebody else takes care of business for us.
No, it's got to be 20, 25 years since we've had a meaningful game against the Miami Dolphins.
So when
I think I got one. I think I remember one. Is with Tannehill. He went into Buffalo needing to win one of the last two games. And I know he lost in Buffalo. Then he came home against the Jets and lost against the Jets. And we missed the playoffs with Joe Philbin. I don't know what year that was.
Joe Philbin.
I forgot that guy existed.
I wish I had a bell that I could ring every time on this podcast as we talk to other people who have different frames of reference. Because we, as Buffalo fans, get tunnel vision. I need a bell that I can ring every time someone brings up a crappy coach.
Well, my
favorite. Because there's a million of them out there that have come and gone through the AFC East over the last.
My favorite's Cam Cameron.
So that might have been, I don't know, 2014 maybe?
So you guys have this big matchup against Buffalo. Is there any concern from your side of the fence? Are you nervous about this game? I mean, I understand that right now it's up in the air. I mean, Vegas pulled the line. So it's one of those things where it's up in the air as to whether the Bills are actually going to even try, whether they're going to put their starters out there. But they do have something to play for if they really deem that number two seed is worth it. So in that way, are you concerned that if the Buffalo Bills decide we need that number two seed and we're going to come to play on Sunday, that you guys are going to have to go toe-to-toe with that? Are you concerned or are you confident that you guys can pull out a win and make the postseason?
I got to be, you know, fine with what they've built so far. They have the number one defense in the NFL. You know, I don't care what anybody says, but and we seem to have a lot of support from the retired referee community. But we got absolutely screwed on those last two calls against the Raiders. So we actually should have won that game a little bit more comfortably. That wasn't pass interference, and that was pass interference on Aguilar on his play against Byron Jones. So, yeah, I think I'm fine with it. I don't think the Bills are going to play anybody because the Steelers kind of let the cat out of the bag today, saying that they are resting people. And they're kind of in a similar spot. Like, they can knock the Cleveland Browns out of the playoffs and grab the two seed, right? And then today your coach kind of said, you know, he's keeping it under wraps. The only thing that you can keep under wraps is that you're going to actually sit everybody, you know, on Sunday. So I'm pretty certain that that's what your coach is probably going to do.
It would be one of the greatest things, one of the greatest troll jobs ever if he talks like that all week. And then just surprise, not only are we starting everybody, but we're putting John Brown out there. We're going to give him 50.
Yeah, and what's also instructive is that the opening line came out and it was -5.5 Buffalo, and then they pulled it within an hour.
Yes.
Then they reopened it at -1.5
yep.
for Buffalo, and they got bet down to -1. So that kind of tells you all you need to know.
It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, but either way, I'm just happy that we have two teams that we can talk about going forward into the future as being the future of the AFC East here over the next few, at least the next few years, and maybe even beyond that. I'm excited.
Even better was all the help that we got this past Sunday. As far as getting in, you know, any yes. one of three teams can lose and we get in. So we get a lot of help. But I don't know if you paid attention to the draft help that we got this past Sunday. Don't even. If the Texans lose.
That's one of the most atrocious things I've ever seen.
They're going to lose because they're going to play the Tennessee Titans, and the Tennessee Titans are playing everybody, and they need the game. So, the Dolphins will have the third overall pick in this coming draft.
How is a team about to qualify for the postseason, Chris, and they get to pick in the top three?
Bill O'Brien.
That's what happened. Why? I wish Brandon Bean had just gotten that in his head a little bit sooner. Like, hey, let's make some deals with Bill O'Brien. This guy's a boob.
I was with my guys on a chat, on a WhatsApp chat that we have for football Sundays, and they were telling me, are you paying attention to what's going on in the NFL? Because we moved all the way up from like 9th to 3rd, and now we're essentially going to get the 3rd pick. It's going to happen.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing what that looks like in the coming weeks and in the coming years. Elf, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social?
Of course, on the 3 yards per carry account on Twitter. That's the number 3 yards per carry. You can find our podcast anywhere you get your podcast.
The NBA is back in action, and football is heading into the playoffs. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to Bet Online today and take advantage of all the great sign up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BlueWire at BetOnline.ag. That's Blue Wire, all one word. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
And so with that, we take a look at our own Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills winning in Foxborough 38-9 over the New England Patriots. Our full recap and playoff discussion with WGR 550's Nate Geary. You can hear that over at our Rock Power Report podcast if you haven't already gone to check that out. Bills Dolphins. Now, we've said it a lot of times here on this show and other various podcasts. For as much as I hated the Patriots and wanted to beat them so badly that I've considered selling some body parts on the black market just to make it happen, I don't consider what we experienced over the last 20 years with them a true rivalry. Would you agree with me on that?
I have never considered the Patriots to be an actual rival of the Bills. And if you think otherwise, you're wrong.
Well, to have a rivalry, it requires a little back and forth. There needs to be some history there. There needs to be the correct amount. Each team has to have a certain amount of schadenfreude for the other, right?
Yes.
It can't just be one team beating another one to a pulp and their fans feeling salty about it. That's not what a rivalry is. A rivalry is two teams that are going to constantly bump each other, kind of go tit for tat with each other. That's what I think of anyway. There's something about this upcoming game against the Miami Dolphins this week that feels like when you bump into someone that you haven't seen in years and you used to be friends with. I mean, I don't know if it's the years that I spent as a kid watching the Kelly and Marino games or the Squish the Fish days at school every Friday before Miami Dolphins, Buffalo Bills. Everyone would, there was face painting going on. You were allowed to wear all your Bills stuff. Like it was celebrated by not just as children in school, but it was everywhere. It was citywide. And then over the course of the decade, neither team was ultimately very good. And that slowly but surely just died. Just died, withered and died on the vine. And when's the last time you remember this matchup having any kind of juice whatsoever?
Probably the early 2000s or maybe late 90s. Because I think in the early 2000s when they had Dave Wanstead and Jay Fiedler and Ricky Williams, it seems like we were playing Miami with shots at the last playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, you know, this rivalry hasn't existed in 25 years.
And yet here we are. We're the only two competitive teams in our division. And when you look at it historically, I mean, the Dolphins hold the series advantage 61-51.
It's because we were 0 for the 70s.
Yes, they beat our asses in the 70s. And then over the last decade, the Bills lead the series 13-8. Mostly a byproduct of Ryan Tannehill's just inexplicable.
Or Adam Gase.
Ryan Tannehill, even without Gase, couldn't win in Buffalo. Like, he would come here and have some of his most embarrassing performances in Buffalo. And then when you look back at the rivalry over my lifetime, there's memories tied to those games. And like I said, some of it's positive, some of it's not. I mean, I can think of a handful just right off the top. The 1990 divisional round game. I was five, but it was the first playoff game I remember seeing, and it sticks in my mind because of the amount of snow that fell during that game. And it was a blizzard by the end of it.
Yeah, I don't have any recollection of that game. But that's probably because after the divisional round is the AFC Championship, where we just blew out the Raiders 51-3, in which I believe the week before the Raiders played the Bengals, that's where we saw the end of Bo Jackson.
Yes. And then what about the Christmas Eve game? The one that we knew Rex Ryan was going to blow.
Oh, yeah, you left that game.
I walked out of that game. I remember looking around. I looked at Potter and I go, Potter, it's Christmas Eve. What the hell are we still doing here?
Yeah, I stayed.
Rex is going to botch this shit. We're leaving. And I remember, Chris, you stayed. Remember 10 men on the field?
Yeah.
For a 50-yard run to set up the game-winning field goal?
Yep.
And I'll never forget that game because of an encounter with a belligerent woman manhandling drunk in the parking lot, which led to me kind of unapologetically stealing his taco dip. Because it was either I was going to leave, or I was going to end up having to fight him despite the fact that his girlfriend for some reason didn't want it to happen. And so the only way I could reconcile it all in my head was, all right, well, this guy's a scumbag, but at least he doesn't get any more of this taco dip because I'm taking it. I still see the Pyrex dish. I still have it. And sometimes I'll go to cook something in it and I just start laughing. And my wife knows. She'll be in the other room and she's just like, it was years ago, Drew. Get over it. Nope. It'll always be funny. Always be funny that I stole that guy's taco dip. What about the Carlos Williams game? I drunkenly called in to WGR 550 following that game and stream of consciousness yelled at Shope and the Bulldog about how Carlos Williams was the heir to LeSean McCoy.
I wish I had that on in my Drew Gear audio vault.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. The Sage Rosenfels game. Yeah, this one will take you back. I remember I was in college and I was working my job at the dining hall and we were cleaning and I'm watching the game on the TVs. The Bills are throttling them, right? Jay Fiedler is having an absolute bomb of a day. We're winning 21-0 and then we knock him out of the game in the fourth quarter. And Sage Rosenfeld comes in and inexorably just crushes our defense in the fourth quarter because we were totally unprepared for what the offense would look like with him at the helm. They score 21 fourth quarter points, and with 6 seconds on the clock, a Chris Chambers touchdown. As time expires, kick the field goal kick the point after to win the game. I don't know that. I remember walking back to my dorm room just numb. Just numb. Like, what the hell just happened to me? We were winning 21-0. And then the 2017 Week 17 matchup. I mean, Miami didn't put up much of a fight, but we get to see Kyle Williams
score a touchdown.
Score a rushing touchdown in what could have been his farewell performance. There's so much history between these teams. I'm sure you guys out there listening to this, some of you older, some of you younger, you have your own games that you can remember back to when you think of rivalry Dolphins-Bills.
Yeah, and tweet at us any of your stories you have or email us.
Yeah, at RockPileReport or RockPileReport716@gmail.com. But now here we are. We're half a week away from the first meaningful matchup where both teams have something to win here. Now, it still has yet to be seen whether and what track the Bills are going to take. That was something we talked about in the Rock Pile Report with Nate Geary. Was that, I mean, you see the Steelers, they've already said that they're going to sit Ben Roethlisberger. They're going to play Mason Rudolph. Even though the number two seed for them is still up for grabs, they're going to punt. And in an offense, Chris, and I could see this, in years where, as a Steelers offense, you had a running game, where your running game could carry some of the load for your offense, I could see that benching Ben Roethlisberger might not be seen as that big of a deal because you'd think, okay, a dominant defensive performance, a suspect Cleveland Browns team, a quarterback who's not going to hopefully not turn the ball over too much. We're just going to feed the running game and let them do the heavy lifting. Their running game is non-existent, which means Mason Rudolph is going to have to win them that game. Where's your trust level with that?
I don't know. Is Mike Gundy the OC?
Mike Gundy.
Yeah, that mullet, the OC. I mean, I'm not sure mullets are even allowed in Pittsburgh, but I don't put any faith in that. I mean, that's a huge game for the Browns.
Huge game for the Browns, and it's a huge game for the Bills. But it's going to be happening simultaneously with our game. But now that we know that they're going to be benching their quarterback, it gives pause to, hey, we go out here and win this game, we are the number two seed. And it sounds like the Steelers aren't interested in competing with us for it, so all we got to do is squeak out a win. So do you go out there with your starters and play to win? I don't know. And that, though, when you think about it, now step outside of that and look at that for a second. For the first time in decades, you have the Miami Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills about to play a football game. Both teams having what they feel like are real quarterbacks at the helm. Star players on their roster that they think can propel them to something bigger. And they each have to get over the other one in order to get where they want to go. That's, Chris, I'm excited about this game. Let's talk about being relaxed in the run-up to Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
When we recapped the game.
You should be relaxed for Sunday.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this because it's the first time we've played them where both teams, like I said, both teams have something to lose here. Miami's fighting for their lives right now. A loss and an Indy win knocks them out of the postseason potentially. I mean, they have to win to control their own destiny. And the Buffalo Bills have something in the number two seed that I think holds value in terms of who you're going to see as matchups and in terms of what home field advantage could be for you, even if it's just without travel. And then when you take a step back out of that and you look around the division and see the state of things, it's clear that not just in 2020, but I'm going to go on record and say that for at least another 4 or 5 years to come, it's going to be Miami and Buffalo jockeying for who's going to be on top and who's going to be the person fighting for their lives in week 17. I feel like this is the first in a number of important games these teams are going to play each other.
I'd 100% agree with that.
Over the next 4 or 5 years. And that has me incredibly excited. I think any Bills fan out there should be excited about the state of the Dolphins, because as our team improves, it means you're finally going to get that matchup in your division you want, right?
Yeah.
A rivalry you can care about, the one that has history, two teams that are seemingly on a similar pace to be good over the next few years. It feels like a revival of what most of us grew up with, something fun. And so in that way, Sunday's more than just a singular game to me. I really do hope it's just a first chapter in something that we've needed throughout this 20 years of mediocrity, a real rivalry. And to that, I raise a glass and say, hey, may the best team not wearing teal win.
2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resume on Indeed match your job criteria. And you can contact them the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. are visiting Indeed each month. So it's clear Indeed can help you get the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
Now strap in and open a fresh one if you can, because this conversation is going to be gold. Here to represent for his New England Patriots as they come on the receiving end of that ridiculous loss on Monday Night Football last night, Mr. Christian Simonelli. Christian, how you feeling today, brother?
What do you want? What? What do you want from my life?
That's exactly it. Oh, you and Mark Schofield, two of the bright spots of my entire day. I listened to his podcast, The Sco Show, over at patspulpit.com. For any Bills fan out there who wants to go and just bask in it, the way I listened to it twice. That's how petty I am. My favorite, the podcast is entitled Nothing Matters. Nothing really matters. And one of the funniest lines in the podcast is he's talking about how there was just too much to criticize from the whole game, or too much that would just enrage a Patriots fan. And he pointed out punting on 4th and 4 when the score is 31-9, because even Bill Belichick knows nothing matters. He goes, even they know nothing matters. Go eat at Arby's. Go do whatever you're going to do. Because nothing matters. What are we doing here? Let's all just go home. We wanted to bring you on tonight to talk about the fan perspective, the end of the golden era of Patriots football, and a fan base that's kind of staring into the unknown right now. What is it like watching this dynasty come to a really just ending in undeniable fashion?
Well, first of all, just to go back to the Schofield podcast real quick, I appreciate the pettiness listening to it twice, because in the old days, as a Patriots fan, I would love to go to opposing teams' websites or major newspapers and read about how their team threw up on themselves and lost. So I appreciate the pettiness. It's wonderful. I love it. We're staring into the abyss right now. I mean, this is unknown territory for a lot of us. I go back really to the Bill Parcells era in 1993 when he was hired as a coach, is when I really began seriously following the team as a kid of 14 years old. And back then, you know, we had nothing. You know, we hadn't drafted Drew Bledsoe. We didn't have anybody. We had nobody. So we have nobody now. Nobody that I would think you can look at and say is a cornerstone to build around. This is a total, I think I mentioned this last time, this is a total tear down to the studs, rebuild. No question about it. And it's foreign territory. It's been a long time, certainly. And, it's not going to happen overnight, despite all the prognosticators saying that, you know, they'll have a decent draft pick and they got a lot of cap space. This is going to take a little bit.
Now, you know, because you listened to the show, but we talked a few weeks ago with Mike DeBate from over Locked On Patriots about the fallout of your team's elimination regarding pundits both locally and nationally, as well as portions of the fan base, which I think there is a trickle-down effect from one level to the next level to the next, actually having the balls to publicly call for Bill Belichick's job. Have people calmed down? I mean, kind of like, I think about Jets fans. They were apoplectic after their team blew their chance at Trevor Lawrence by winning that one football game. And then the next atrocity, they come along, they win a game. The fan base doesn't seem like they're that riled up. I mean, we're going to have to ask him later tonight. But everyone seems like they've just kind of accepted things for what they are. Have fans calmed down, or did last night's game, I mean, what does that do to the fan psyche, especially those who are already on the ledge?
It pushed them over it. I mean, if today's talk radio shows are any indication, it's as high as ever. It's people are priceless. They are. They're beautiful. We'll give Bill this year, but if we don't see any progress next year, show them the door. I mean, it's amazing. It's like 20 years never happened. I mean, and to me, a lot of that stems from Bill's abrasiveness over the years and his stubbornness and his dealing with the media, I think, is really what pisses a lot of people off, and especially a lot of the media, but so also a lot of the fans. So I think there's a little bit of that to it as well. Like, screw this guy, he's always been a dink and he blues and couldn't happen to a better guy, ha ha ha. So I really don't think that's the tell sign of a real fan, you know, that really support the team and logically look at it. Have his drafts been terrible? God, yeah. Look at that graphic last night on ESPN comparing the last four Bills drafts to the Patriots drafts. It wasn't even close. It was just embarrassing. So he's had bad drafts. He got the rug pulled out from under him with Jimmy G and the owner. I don't care what anybody says. The owner made him get rid of Jimmy G. But that was 3 years ago now, okay? And he's had plenty of time to address the quarterback position, and he hasn't. But yeah, I mean, the real lunatics, the real psychos are calling for his head. They're calling for his head. They, at the very least, at the bare minimum, the majority of people want him to give up some of the personnel responsibility and hand it over to, you know, a GM, another scout, and put more trust in those types of people.
As you're watching that game last night, what was the moment? What was the moment when you knew it was over?
Tamir Bird, the football hit him right in the helmet, hit him right in the face guard, and it was the Cam couldn't have thrown a better pass. It's probably the best pass he's thrown all year, with the exception of the bomb that he threw to Julian Edelman in week 2 against the Seahawks. It was a perfect throw, and it hit Bird right in the grill, right off his visor, and it just dropped the ball. And I go, they're going to get steamrolled. I said, because if there was an opportunity for them to go up a score and to have any momentum at all, that was it. And once I saw that, I go, they're dead. That's the best pass he's going to throw all night. They're dead. And then from there on out, it was a total bloodbath.
I mean, and to your point, Cam doesn't get many good ones, so don't waste him when he does.
Right.
As a fan watching Cam Newton, you came on our podcast I almost had Chris go back and harvest the audio. That's how petty I was feeling today. When they announced that you guys had signed Cam Newton, we brought you on the show to talk about what your feeling, because there was a lot from the national pundit community talking about how Cam Newton suddenly made you guys Super Bowl contenders, and that Cam Newton would at least get you guys to the playoffs, because anything else, I mean, with Bill Belichick and to Cam Newton, how could this not work? So to watch him go play the game that he played last night, and to get benched halfway through the third quarter. I mean, I was telling Chris during the game, I don't remember a time that the Buffalo Bills have ever chased a Patriots starting quarterback off the field. I can't recall. Now that as a fan you've seen this, I mean, you talk about a rebuild, you got to ask the question, what is the quarterback position for the Patriots? I mean, I've seen things about... I mean, we kind of talked about how Cam Newton was not going to have the impact, because I've watched enough of his play that I didn't think he had anything left. And he's gone on to illustrate that. Now the question is, what's next? I mean, first of all, Cam Newton gets humbled. Stidham comes in and he doesn't really change the momentum of the game one iota. They might as well have left Cam Newton in. I mean, he had a little bit more zip on the ball downfield, but really there was no one open for him to throw to. And when there were, his throws weren't great. So with that in mind, now you're looking at a team that has no quarterback room. You've got some young defensive talent. I mean, when we talk about the future, because last night when it was over, did you watch it in its entirety? I need to know.
Oh yeah, I totally hate watched the rest of the whole game. Yeah, absolutely.
And did you?
Oh yeah, no, this is good old fashioned hate watching. Yep.
Did you see the moment that Belichick and Sean McDermott had?
Oh, listen, he hugged him like he was his brother. Did you see that embrace? Did you see the embrace? Do you want to know what that is? Honestly, that is respect.
That's
McDermott
it.
And the pro and young guys program. Oh, that's exactly what that was.
I was waxing poetic about it over in our Rockpile Report podcast this week, just about what that was. and how that's the image that I'll walk away from this game. It's going to be forever seared in my brain. The day I saw Bill Belichick crack and actually have to be just, he had to admit that he had a peer on the football field. Yep. Because I've never seen him behave like that. So now for you as a fan, it's to rare. See that and to know, hey, there's another, there's finally, after 20 years of you guys running the division, there's another coach in this division who's younger, probably has more time, has a better roster now, and you've got this rebuild in front of you. And to your point, you haven't really had to go through this in your life since you were a teenager. And for most of your adult life, the Patriots have been kind of the gold standard of the NFL, right?
Right.
Now you've got you've got a Hall of Fame coach who, just between age and momentum and everything else, who knows what the future is as far as the leadership of this team, of this franchise. Knowing what you've seen from the team this year and the players that make up its roster, and even knowing the age of the players who are returning, who opted out. I mean, that was at the beginning of the season. You heard a lot of Patriots fans going, oh, well, Hightower opted out, and Chung opted out.
And Marcus Cannon.
And this, what a callback. So when all these guys opted out, when you think about them coming back with their age and just what they're going to be on the football field, that's still not enough to really make you feel good about the long-term future of this team. And then you figure you've got this new team in the division that seems to have his shit together. Does this rebuild feel bigger now, in kind of in the aftermath of this game, than it did back at the beginning of the season?
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned the quarterback room. The quarterback room, in my opinion, is going to look totally different than it did this year. My hope is that they somehow acquire a veteran, somebody in the, you know, hate to say it, but Ryan Fitzpatrick type mold, and draft a quarterback. Those opt-outs you mentioned, there's no guarantee they come back. In the broadcast last night, you know, they were talking about, I think it was Steve Levy said, you know, he was talking about Bill Belichick and about the opt-outs, and he said, you know, oh, gee, you know, you really got hit with those opt-outs, the most in the league, eight of them, and, you know, and you know, that's, you know, but at least you got those guys coming back next year. And Bill was quick to say, nobody said they're coming back next year. My contention is they're probably not. You got guys that are on the other side of 30 that have won championships, that have made their money. Why come back? I mean, listen. The ones that play the longest, like Brady, are absolute lunatics, and they're maniacal, and they're psychos. And they love to play, and that's all they want to do. And that's great if they play for your team. But the most normal people, like the rest of us, will say, let me get out of here while I still got my brain intact. I've made my money. I got my rings. I'll have my family. I'm good. And Buffalo playing so well this year, and really Allen emerging, Miami looking pretty good. Tua is still very raw, but there's another team that is actually going to not just be a walkover. The Jets, I have no idea what they are or what they're going to be. But yeah, that's why I said a couple years. It's not going to be next year they're great because they have all this money and they're going to do this and that. No, like, this is going to take a little bit, because for the first time in a long time, you have a division that is actually going to be, you're going to have to go through. I think the statistic since Belichick was hired is that the AFC East has hired 28 or 29 coaches since he's been head coach of the Patriots. You have some stability in Buffalo. Looks like you're going to have some stability in Miami. Those were turnstiles, just like the Jets all those years. So, yeah, this is going to be a long haul.
Chris, it couldn't happen to a nicer group of people, huh?
Exactly. You know, Christian's been coming on the show since basically our inception 5 years ago, and there have been a handful of times where he's talked us into, like, oh, this might be the year, and for it to finally come to fruition, it's just glorious.
It feels real good. I'm not going to lie to you. It feels really good to watch this all fall apart for you guys. I'm not even going to try to hide it, Christian. It's a nice feeling for me.
And
well, it should. It should be. I'd feel good if I was in your shoes, too. I mean, it's a shame you haven't been able to actually physically be there and watch the team this year. We had to watch it from afar, but hey, still.
I'll tell you, it just really has been something to watch the changing of the guard in this division play out over the course of the year. It's going to be crazy to see what the future holds, and I just hope that the fan base, the fan base in New England doesn't eat itself alive. Although if it does, again, Chris, I'll get out that tiny little violin, and I will play you guys the saddest song ever written. Christian, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social?
You can find me on Twitter at Chris with a T-I-A-N, and give me a follow and I'll follow you back. I, as always, much I love going back and forth with fans of all teams, not just the Bills, but of all teams. But, you know, Bills are good people, man. Bills Mafia, you guys are all right. You guys are okay. I gotta tell you, I'll be cheering for you. You know, I'll be cheering for you. Now here's the thing. Now, if you make it to the dance and you just happen to make it, and on the other side of the field is going to be a guy in a orange uniform, and he formerly was with the team for 20 years. I may have to pick a side then. I don't know. I'm just saying, if it gets that far, I don't know. I don't know who I'll be cheering for at that point.
Oh, Jesus. If it's Bills against – Chris, wouldn't that be the most fitting thing? The Bills make the Super Bowl, and it's Bills against
– Bucks.
Against Buccaneers and Tom Brady, and they wear those hideous Sherbert uniforms.
I actually like that old logo. But I believe the Super Bowl is in Tampa this year, right?
Yep.
It is, right?
Oh, yep. God. All right. Don't speak that evil into existence, Simonelli. But thanks for joining us.
That's my only hope.
All right, you guys, let's listen up. We won a game yesterday. And if we win one today, that's two in a row. We win one tomorrow, that's called a winning streak. It has happened before. So let's see some hustle. Let's jack it up a little. I got a feeling things are about to turn around for us.
And as we close out this week's AFC East Roundup, I would be remiss if we didn't talk about the team also on a winning streak here in the AFC East, in the New York Jets, who just won 23-16 against the Cleveland Browns. Their head coach is channeling his inner Lou Brown, and here to talk about it with us tonight is Scott Mason from Play Like a Jet. How are you doing, sir?
How'd you like to manage the Cleveland Indians, Lou? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? It's your chance to manage in the big leagues. I got a guy on the other line about some white walls. I'll talk to you later. Classic stuff. Yeah, that's about how I feel about it. When somebody says, oh, the Jets have a two-game winning streak. I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? They haven't won games all year. Aren't you happy? I got a guy on the other line about some white walls. I'll talk to you later.
That is about the sum of it, sir. It's as I'm sitting at my table in the basement. You know, it's a bored Sunday because there's no Bills football on. And I don't know what to do with these days. I'm glad that these primetime games have come to an end for a while because I never know what to do with my day. I'm like, I should be drinking beer and watching football, but there's no Bills on. And that just makes me a drunk wandering around my house, which isn't a good look. So instead, I'm sitting there and I'm trying to be productive around the house with some football games on. I've got the Sunday ticket, so I'm allowed to watch a million different things. And I'm watching this Jets-Cleveland game because in my head, I was going to ignore it. And then I heard about the COVID hitting their wide receivers. And I said, okay, if Baker Mayfield is a good quarterback, he should be able to find a way to overcome this lack of playmaking talent to at least orchestrate something that looks like an NFL caliber offense. What I was treated to was a Jets team that actually looked like it brought its lunchbox. I mean, I didn't watch the game against the Rams, but by all accounts, the Jets were firing on all cylinders for the majority of the game. In this one, I mean, the Jets led from wire to wire. And then for stretches, we're badly outplaying the Cleveland Browns. Where has this team been all season?
Well, to be fair to Baker Mayfield, it's not just that he had practice squad caliber receivers. It's that he was told about it 12 hours before the game. So these are guys that he probably didn't even know, hadn't even met practically before the he signed out 12 hours before. Plus, he was missing arguably his two best offensive linemen, Wyatt Teller and Jedrick Wills. So you put that together and the fact that the Jets were able to remarkably stop one of the best running attacks in the league, Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, and really everything was working against Baker Mayfield. Now, that's not to say that he didn't shoot himself in the foot a few times. There were times where he would throw a ball into the dirt or whatever, but boy, this was a really tough circumstance for any quarterback. Yeah, you have to look at that and say, where was this? Where was the pass rush all season? Now, again, they were missing two of their best offensive linemen, but still, the Jets were missing Quinn and Williams, and yet they were able to get four sacks in this game. The interior defensive line was just throwing the Browns' offensive line around. They shut down the running game. And on offense, look, they didn't really do a lot. The best pass of the game was thrown by Jamison Crowder, but they did enough that they were able to basically let their defense hold Cleveland and score enough points to get the victory. If they played like this more often, obviously they wouldn't be 2-13 at this point, but I think that's a big part of the problem with this team. They don't have a great team, but they should have at least been more competitive, and that speaks, of course, to the guy that's been the biggest villain of the season for Jets fans, Adam Gase.
Okay, so on that note, trick plays. I mean, this was my, I'm watching this unfold and I'm going, I'm watching this team run trick plays for touchdowns. I'm watching them orchestrate some downfield passing. I'm watching them string, the rushing attack is starting to emerge a little bit. They're getting sustained drives, at least in the first half. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, if Adam Gase has had these pages in his playbook all year, I mean, were they just stuck together and he missed them? Or, I mean, am I crazy? Or were they finally dialing up stuff that was unique to what they've done all year?
Well, it's kind of funny because I can't tell you how many times Jamison Crowder has been open for big plays or touchdowns, and either Darnold or Flacco just didn't see him or missed him or whatever. So I was saying, based on the throw that Crowder threw on the run, hitting Braxton Berrios in stride, if Crowder had been a quarterback and been throwing to himself all season, the Jets might actually be in the playoff hunt right now. So that's something that Gase probably should have tried earlier. Yeah, I mean, he's obviously getting a little bit creative and emptying out the playbook, and it's too little too late. If he'd have tried this earlier, as you said, they might have had better luck. Maybe they'd have a couple more wins. But ultimately, this is a tough pill to swallow, but a lot of this comes down to the fact that you have terrible coaching and terrible quarterback play for most of the way, and that's why the results have been what they were. This wasn't a good game for Sam Darnold. I know that he had a couple of showy throws, mostly in busted coverage. This really was more a product of they did just enough to get by on offense, and defensively they were able to really cause damage, especially considering what happened with those wide receivers and the offensive line for the Browns. So, yeah, they'd have been more competitive if they'd have played this way, but they've still got problems that really need to be addressed, and obviously Gase is the one that's going to be addressed first.
So with that in mind, you're talking about Sam Darnold. Now, you guys have cemented your future. And two questions. This win cemented the New York Jets as the runner-up in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes this season. Just a week after the team inflamed the entire fan base by beating the struggling LA Rams. Are fans a little less apoplectic after this game than they were at this time last week?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there were still things to be gained by a loss here. For instance, with the tie, the Jets would have been picking first on day two and day three of the draft, which is actually pretty valuable. So they lost that by winning this game. But I think once the Jaguars got their butts kicked, because remember, in the first half, the Jaguars were tied, and they actually drove at the end of the half to potentially take the lead. So at that point, you're yelling and screaming at the TV, don't screw this up again, don't screw this up again. But then once the Bears took that big lead in the third quarter and you knew it was over, I think there was sort of a sigh of relief where you didn't have to go through this stressful ordeal anymore. I think that now you've got to come to grips as a Jets fan with it's over. team is picking number two. Where do they go from here? And that's obviously the big question heading into the offseason, along with who the coach is going to be.
Well, and so this, and so the, that's another part of my question here, because now that fans are kind of, they've kind of come down off their, off the ledge a little bit. In these two wins, do you think Darnold has shown enough that there's reason to believe building around him could work? Or is that looming payday of his and the lack of growth you've seen over the last couple of years, at least in your opinion, too much to overcome for a team to want to hitch its wagon to? And do you think that the team really would be better served seeking out quarterback help in this draft?
Well, let's play this through. So with the way Darnold has played so far, there's no way that you can pick up that fifth-year option, which would be $25 million, right? So he's basically got 1 year left on his deal, given that scenario. So Darnold comes back, right? Now, again, considering how poorly he's played, you can't just hand him the job. It would be malpractice. Now, first of all, you also have to say the coach coming in is going to have a lot to say about whether or not Darnold is the guy. So let's just say the coach isn't sold on Darnold necessarily, but also isn't sold on the quarterbacks in this draft. That would probably be the best case scenario for Darnold if he wants to stay. Now you've got to go out and get somebody, a veteran, to compete with Darnold for the job. So let's just use Marcus Mariota as an example, and I think I said this last week, but you could pick whoever you want. There's a good chance Darnold doesn't win that job in training camp if you're talking about a coach who isn't tied to him. And so if that happens, now the Jets are really screwed because Darnold has no trade value, and he's done at the end of the year. What if he ends up being the starter, though, and he's not good? Well, he's gone now again. What if he's the starter, and he's okay? He's improved, but he's not anything more than, like, solid. Well, now you're in a situation where, as you said, you've got to pay him, what, $30 million, and you're still not entirely sure that he's the guy. So if you bring Darnold back and assume he's going to be your starter, the only way that you win is if Darnold breaks out and is awesome. If that happens, then you can franchise tag him and you can work out a long-term deal, but that's really the only winning in this scenario. Consider the fact that you're sitting at number two in what's a pretty good quarterback class. You've got Zach Wilson from BYU. You've got Justin Fields from Ohio State. You've got Trey Lance from North Dakota State, who a lot of people aren't talking about, obviously because of the fact that he's only played one game because North Dakota State didn't play this year. But last year, he lit up college football. So he's a guy that is going to draw top 10 consideration, too. You're at number two. You don't know where you're going to be sitting. The 22 quarterback class is going to look like. And remember, the last time the Jets were playing for a quarterback, it was 2017. They ended up picking sixth, had to trade 3 second-rounders to get up to get a quarterback, still didn't know which quarterback they were going to ultimately be able to get, and then the quarterback they did get hasn't performed yet. So I think if there's a quarterback that they like at number two, whoever it is, whether it's Fields, whether it's Lance, whether it's Wilson, they should pull the trigger on that, because you've got to play the odds on this. And really, considering everything I said about being in position to get a quarterback, whether or not you know you're going to like a quarterback in a future draft, and then what I said with Darnold, that really the only way that you win coming out of this is if he's awesome. Playing the percentages, you've got to make that move right now if you like one of these quarterbacks. And plus also, from what you hear, there are teams that are willing to give up something along the lines of a second-round pick for Darnold. If he comes in here and doesn't win the job or isn't all that good, you lose any potential trade value. If you get a guy that you like at number two, you move Darnold, you get yourself another second-round pick, and now you can build around the new guy on a rookie contract. So while I don't think it's impossible that Darnold can still become good, I think we have to be realistic about what his ceiling is now after all of these games that he's played. You're probably looking at best, a plus version of Alex Smith. Is that enough to hang on to him and not pull the trigger on a quarterback at number two? To me, the only way that it makes sense to do that is if you either are incredibly convinced between Douglas and the new coach that Darnold is going to have that breakout, or you just really don't like any of those quarterbacks that are going to be available to you at number two. But if you like one of those quarterbacks and you're not 100% lock, stock, and barrel convinced that Darnold is going to become a star under a new coach, you've got to pick a quarterback at number two.
The crazy part for you guys is that it's really going to come down to which quarterback gets picked at number two by you guys. It's really going to come down to whoever gets hired as head coach. And Chris,
yeah,
kind of like our friend Lou Brown, wouldn't it be funny if this winning streak that they're on at the end of the year somehow saves Adam Gase's job?
Highly unlikely.
All right. I feel terrible for even attempting to speak that into existence. Sir, we appreciate your joining us and giving us your insight on the Jets. Why don't you tell everybody what you guys have going on at Play Like a Jet and where they can find you on social?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, by the way, Drew, about Gase. I actually have a podcast. We're recording this with you on Tuesday. I have a podcast coming out tomorrow. So by the time you hear this, it'll actually be up with Nick Spano, who's the CEO of U Stadium. And he's not a reporter or anything, but he's very plugged into agents and sources around the league, and he's got a source in the Jets front office who feeds him information from time to time. And so he comes on my show whenever he's got something to talk about. He had a report at U Stadium the other day that Adam Gase is still 100% gone no matter what happens against the Patriots. And, in fact, Craig Carton from WFAN has come out and said that he also has a source that has said that Christopher Johnson has told people internally that Gase is gone. So, listen, anything's possible with this team. I wouldn't put it past them, but it seems like even the Jets aren't foolish enough to try and hang on to Gase, because I'll tell you guys, I've seen a lot of things that would have driven Jets fans up a wall. I promise you that if Adam Gase was retained, that you would see about 30,000 people cancel their season tickets. So at least they're smart enough not to poke that bear. As far as Play Like a Jet, you can hear that podcast with Nick Spano, along with all the regular shows that we do, Joe Blewett breaking down the film, Michael Nania breaking down the advanced metrics, the analytics, and the stats, Andy Vasquez with the post-game report, taking us inside the locker room after the game and recapping everything that goes on after these games, Brian Bassett, his friends Travis Milton and Josh Conrad doing There's Always Next Year, which is a fun look at the Jets, and then they play some little games and just goof around, which is a nice change of pace. Midweek news with Chris Ryan from NJ.com, although that's going to be changing soon. An old friend of the podcast is returning, and I'm not going to say any more about it. He'll be coming back, one of my favorite guests. He's going to be covering the Jets again soon, so he'll be returning to the show next week. And then we do draft stuff. Connor Rogers and Charlie Campbell of WalterFootball.com come on the show a lot to break that down, because that's going to be very important for Jets fans. You can find the show where you find all podcasts, Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and I'm on Twitter. I play like a Jet One. And guys, appreciate you having me on as always. And I will say that nothing made this loss feel less painful than hearing the voice of the legendary Lou Brown. Major League, one of my all-time favorite movies. So anytime you can use a clip from that, you should absolutely take the opportunity to do it.
Appreciate the trio of guests that we had tonight. Christian Simonelli, Scott Mason, Alf Arteaga. It's good to, you know what, it's good to get the fan perspective of the Patriots at this point in time from Christian. His first, I bet when they last had a losing season, Christian had hair.
Look at him now, folks, at Chris with a TIAN. Go look at him now. Hey, that's what getting married will do to you.
Yeah.
He might have been bald before that, but I rest. I digress. You look at Week 17. The Week 17 outlook, it's division-on-divisional opponent crime. Home and homes, you got Miami and Buffalo, New England, and New York Jets. For Buffalo and Miami, there's a lot at stake. For both teams. And it's going to be interesting to see what Buffalo's approach is to it. I mean, Vegas just pulled the line. I just saw it pop up on my phone. Vegas has pulled the line for the game because there's too much up in the air as to whether or not Buffalo will actually play all of their starters, whether they're going to come to actually try to win that football game. It's going to be that I think is going to be, it's an interesting dynamic. It's something that we as Bills fans aren't used to.
No, we're not.
I mean, what, 2 years in a row we're resting, potentially resting starters?
Yeah, we haven't done that since the 90s.
Yeah, I don't know what this is. For Miami, this is a must-win game. Your survival in this postseason is on, like, in this season is on the line. And it's going to be interesting to see how they choose, like we talked about with Elf, how they choose to approach this. They've already said Tua is still the starter. How short is that leash, though?
Very short.
Elf still talks about having faith, but it's going to be interesting to watch play out. And for New England and the Jets, I think this is just kind of the, can we call it the sadness bowl?
Yeah.
Just a game between two sad teams with sad fan bases. And I couldn't be happier about it. I could not be more thrilled to watch these two. Do you think New England takes the track of trying to start whoever to see what they have?
Yeah. At this point, I think you start Jared Stidham, see what you got.
Maybe try to throw a game, save your draft position.
Yeah.
I mean, or do they put Cam Newton out there and try to salvage what's left of his image? I mean, right now, he sure as hell isn't going to get you any compensatory picks. I don't know who would sign him to be a starter.
No. Plus, there's a lot of more potential free agent quarterbacks this year with your Matt Ryan, your Matt Stafford, your Dak Prescott.
But I'll take it a step farther.
That's a conversation for another day.
I don't know who would sign him to be a backup.
No.
Kind of as we talked about with Simonelli, what does he bring to the table that somebody else can't? The whole dynamic is skewed. It's going to be interesting to watch that one play out strictly from a petty, just like a petty, petty place. It's going to be great. Folks, big week 17 and the playoffs to come. This has been fun. In this season, I think this AFC's roundup, just in the download numbers and in the amount of feedback we've gotten from, not even just from Bills fans, but from fans of other teams around the division who are now following us and listening to the shows and interacting with us. I love it. I think this was a huge success. Chris, I appreciate you taking a flyer on this idea with me.
Yeah, I'm up for anything. So as long as it works and people like it and listen to it, you know.
You heard that, ladies.
Yeah.
He's up for anything.
Up for anything. Yeah. Right. Yeah. As long as if you have an idea that you want me to sit here and press record and listen to you complain about things, yeah.
Awesome. Guys, this has been a lot of fun, but we got to get the hell out of here. I'm Drew Gear. Thank you to our guests. That's Chris Krueger. And this has been your Week 16 AFC East Roundup.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.